Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me today. It's my pleasure to be part of your day. And the fact that you're here means you're a highly intelligent, highly discerning, extremely smart person. Obviously, if you're listening to this show, that you're among the smartest in the world. And one of the reasons that you are is because of our good friend Bill Brandt. Bill is joins us quite often, and he drops his pearls on us and helps us to become a lot smarter. And if you've been listening to the show for very long, you've heard Bill, and therefore you've gotten smarter. Bill is our good friend. He's the president of Development Specialists Incorporated, one of the smartest guys I know in the marketplace, and he's here to talk to us about what's going on out there, not only in our local marketplace, not only in our national marketplace, but in the marketplace that's across the planet. He's our good friend. Bill Brandt, welcome back to the show.
Well, good morning, Jim, and I join the chorus of people congratulating you on the 8th anniversary of this wonderful show, The Small Business Advocate. You've done the nation and your listeners a great service over that time.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Bill, but as I've said before, none of this happens without my Brain Trust members, because my audience doesn't even want to imagine the scenario that would have me on the show here all by myself all the time without really smart folks like you joining me, and so I appreciate that very much. You've made a great contribution to us over the years, and for that we thank you.
Well, I'm only able to make that contribution, as are the others, because you provide a central forum for this expression of ideas, which I think has served your listeners well, as I say.
Well, thanks. And of course, you're one of the guys that I think of when we talk about talking about ideas. You know, I put you right up on top of the list there, because you always bring us some great ideas. And I'd like to talk about the economy a little bit first, if we could. Bill, when I hear the Democrats talking about the economy, if I only heard them saying, you know, what they thought about the economy, I'd be a little bit worried about the economy. But then I look over and I see that 2 million jobs were created in 2005. They are projecting 2006, 1.8 million new jobs. We got 5% unemployment, which is many economists consider to be full employment. We got third quarter with all the stuff we had going on. Third quarter growth was 3.8. I had an economist on yesterday who said he thought fourth quarter was going to be 3.8. 2006 may be off just a little bit, but still not bad. More than double Europe. Which game are these two people watching?
I think they're all watching the same game, Jim. But I think there are varied interpretations of the same game. And I'm not taking the Democrat or the Republican side.
I'm not either, by the way.
I have no argument that the economy seems to be humming along a bit if you look at just the statistics. I have a great deal of unease, as I think does the American people, about the trappings of how the economy is running along. And I think it has a big impact on your listeners or will. When I look at the things that are happening, the pension crisis and other issues, I won't argue with you that there are jobs being created. And without slighting those jobs, I will tell you that we don't need to teach our kids how to speak French and Spanish in high school only so they can learn how to say, would you like fries with that, in
right.
different languages.
Would you like that? Would you like paper or plastic? I agree.
And so that's some of my concern, is where the jobs are being created. There is no doubt that America has moved to a service economy. You and I have talked about for a long time on these shows how back in the early 60s, when we were both much younger, at least I was, you were always on the show in the 60s, weren't you, as I recall?
That was a little before the showtime, yeah.
You were on with some hard rock then, as I recall.
There you go, I was. No, you're right, yeah.
you may not remember it because of other things that you've done.
We won't go there.
Basically, a great deal, 5 to 6 out of every 10 jobs had to do with the automobile and the manufacturing base. And we've really changed
And construction.
And construction. And when you talk about the automobile base, you mean everything related to it, from making the windshields to paving the roads to pumping the gas. And we've moved a long way down that. And a lot of our manufacturing jobs quite rightly, are being done in areas where manufacturing costs less to do and the economies of the products allow us to buy it cheaper at Walmart. But
right.
It's put us at a point in an equilibrium where we can't quite figure out where we're going. One of the jokes I've seen recently making the rounds, which has, unfortunately, a strong point to it, is we've now taken a number of people who are near retirement age, and we've removed their pensions from them
yep.
with very little time to recover. By sending large corporations to the bankruptcy court, but now we've made it difficult for these people to go into bankruptcy themselves with the new laws. It's a very strange anomaly. All of which presents, I think, great opportunities for the small entrepreneur and some substantial downsides.
Which is what, and I want you to pick up right on that point when we come back after these messages. And I agree with you. That's one of the reasons, as you know, why I've been calling the 21st century the century of the entrepreneur since the 20th century. 20 till, we'll be right back with our good friend Bill Brandt. I told you he'd have some really smart things to say. Stay with us.
Oh, I'm bad. I'm
happy anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind. Happy anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind.
Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here on our 8th anniversary week as we celebrate this milestone in our show and with our Brain Trust members like our good friend Bill Brandt, the president of Development Specialists Incorporated. And Bill and I were just talking about the economy. And Bill, one of the things, and I'm going to set you up, I'm going to get you right back into where you were. one of the things that I remember you and I talking about, you and I talked about this specifically three and 4 years ago on the show, that I was worried that we weren't that our employees who were coming into the 21st century with 20th century skills, that we hadn't prepared those people for 21st century jobs. And if you remember, I said the political party that could address that issue and have a plan for how to get those people redirected could win every election for the next, you know, decade. I said that, and I still believe that. Neither party really did that. But what I think is happening, Bill, because of some of the people that you were mentioning as we went to the break, I think that that's happening, but not because of anything the government did, but because what's happening in the marketplace. People are finding, they're getting retrained, they're finding jobs that suit them, or, Bill, they're doing what I did in 1989, and what you did, I'm not sure when, they're starting their own business.
For me, it was 1975, so
yeah.
I was out there. What happened is actually I had double parked my Brontosaurus, as you recall. And while I was in getting some new feed, it occurred to me. No, I think... And here lies the conundrum that you and I have talked about so endlessly on these shows. You know, Bill Clinton talked about building a bridge to the 21st century. George Bush talks about what needs to be done with respect to training our workforce for the 21st century. And they're both correct. And no matter what your political stripe is,
right.
You know, politicians get elected by looking ahead. And these aren't dumb people, and they're giving some thought to where this is going. But there is a limit to what government can do. In many ways, all government can really do, and it's the most effective use, is to stand on the sidelines, point out the obvious, and cheer that the market gets
right.
you there.
Yeah. Well said.
In the indomitable spirit of the American public is, if there's a way to make a buck, we'll find it. I think somebody once told me that they'd feel very good about how the American experiment was going as long as people were still trying to break out of prison.
Right.
And looking
exactly.
at headlines recently, we're doing pretty well on that score, apparently.
Exactly.
I'm assuming, by the way, that they set up it as a test so every so often people can break out just so everybody can reassure themselves that things are fine.
Right.
But all kidding aside, I think that your listener base is symptomatic and emblematic of where the 21st century is going to go. And as we talked about just before the break, the job structure has changed. Large American corporations are getting rid of what would have been the cradle-to-grave sort of security they granted in years past, and people even working for those corporations now, and certainly those getting into it, are realizing that they have to provide for themselves. Now, what government can do, to finish this long soliloquy, is provide some of the tools to help people plan for themselves. And perhaps it shouldn't be limited to IRAs and KEHOs that have small cutoffs,
right,
and the rest of it. But we'll figure out that in a short order. I mean, messing around with the tax code is probably the most important thing we can do for your listener base in terms,
right,
of creating jobs and giving opportunities and simplifying
making it where whatever precious capital we get to redeploy, and that it's not improperly and overly taxed.
There are two kinds of precious capital, Jim. There's money, and I don't want to sell that short, but there's also time. And if anybody,
right,
out in your audience differs with me, they should write me cards and letters. But they all know what it's like to work those long hours at the shop and then come
Absolutely.
Home. And the fact of the matter is, if those long hours at the shop are extended because people are filling out yet another infernal form,
right,
at some point you've got to make it easier. One of the things I commend Mayor Daley, who's a fairly middle-of-the-road politician, for doing in Chicago is he set up an office to cut through the red tape. Now, it's not perfect, and a lot of people will probably be cynical about it, but he tries to put on one form the licenses and the taxes and to begin to eliminate the bureaucracy,
right,
so as to foster. I mean, you know your listeners. When they're not filling out forms, they're actually making money.
Right,
and
trying to anyway.
The more we can focus them on that, the better we're all going to be.
Right. Well, what do you think the answer is? I mean, where do we find that kind of leadership, Bill?
I think we find it in your audience. I think that some of the folks who are becoming successful entrepreneurs, you know, Golisano, for example, in New York, who's a fairly conservative fellow who's thinking of running for governor, mm-hmm, there are a host of people who have made their fortunes in the past 10 to 15 years in what amounts to be the embryonic portion of this new economy and are realizing just what it takes to foster that spirit through the economic system, and they're starting to run for office. I would encourage your listeners to support them, no matter what their political stripe is. We may differ greatly on a lot of issues, but if you see someone running for office who has an outline that sounds or seems really familiar to you in terms of how you got where you are or where you're trying to get, those folks are likely to be far more sympathetic to what it takes to lift your burdens than the folks who've traditionally done nothing but speak from the pulpit of politics for years.
Yeah. One of the problems we got, though, Bill, is the really best and the brightest that you just described, and I agree with everything you just said 100%. The problem is they're seeing what's going on in Washington right now, and it ain't pretty, and it's uglier than it's been in my lifetime, and it makes the best and the brightest say, you know what, I don't need that. I think I'm going to go do something else, and that's unfortunate. But when we come back, the president is in Asia, and I'd like to know what you think he's going to say to the Chinese. I think today, because you know the Chinese, and you know what the president's thinking probably, and so I'd like to get your thoughts on that. We're going to do that right after these messages, folks. Bill Brand is our guest. He's with Development Specialists Incorporated. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Bill Brandt, President and Founder of Development Specialists Incorporated. Bill, we need your website, and please tell us what DSI is.
The website is www.dsi, as in the initials, davidsamindiana.biz, B-I-Z, kind of a different URL, one of the new ones. DSI has been around for just about 30 years, and we make a practice of helping businesses, small and large, restructure themselves or face challenges and problems that they face as they go along and grow. Some of the ones we worked on are as common to all of you as American household names, such as Huffy and Andy Frayn-Ushers, and others, I think, are quietly small, and we're happy that they're all back on the street.
Well, good. We appreciate that very much. And, folks, I encourage you to check out Bill's website. One of the reasons is he writes outstanding articles. You already know he's a very smart guy, but the articles he writes are outstanding, and a number of other people contribute too. And you can read those on his website for free. And, Bill, we appreciate you making those available.
I think free is the most important word there. So
yeah,
we don't even ask that you register and stay on our mailing list.
That's right.
We, in fact, would we prefer you stay on Jim's mailing list? So.
I appreciate that, Bill. Bill, the president is in Asia, even as we speak, and perhaps talking to the Chinese. If he's not talking to them right now, he's going to be very soon. He knows when that's going to be. What does he need to tell them, and what is he going to tell them?
Well, not only the president is in Asia, but when you and I were younger, we would routinely look up to see our American politicians trooping through Western Europe and talking about our strong need for relations and
right.
how there was a bridge to Europe that we had to cement. You look up at any one point in this market these days, and you will see a bevy of similar American politicians. Instead of in Europe, they'll be in China.
Mm-hmm.
And today, there are three American politicians as I look up in China, I believe, if I have all their schedules. President Bush is certainly there. Governor Schwarzenegger is there. And even Mayor Gavin Newsom of San Francisco is there. And I've been telling people for 30 years that as strong an ally as Europe was in the last century, the focus is inevitably going to be west for Americans.
Or go west, young man.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly where it is. And President Bush is there, I think, trying to cement relationships and continue the master foreign policy that the U.S. puts forth, which is we would like to see China evolve into a trading partner
right.
that far more resembles Germany than it does the old Soviet Union. And,
yeah.
and that is the vexing problem. But there are inequities, to be sure, in trade. They will always be there. We will always have fights. Heck, we're having a great fight right now with Argentina and Brazil over
yep.
free trade in the Americas.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But those are transitory. The real issue is, can we, through trade and through the linkages we're making in the economies, make China a long-term co-ally with us in prosperity rather than someone who is competing against us to the death?
Well, and see, that's something that's very important for you to say, and I'm glad you said it, because what I've been saying to my audience is we need to consider China to be a customer, not a competitor. We need to try to think of them more as a partner, not a competitor, as you said earlier. And remember that's what is it, 1.2 billion customers
yep.
that they have over there. I mean, that's and I also remind folks something you probably said to us as well, Bill, in the past, and that's that 92 or 93% of all customers that we could work with in the world live outside the United States.
Well, two countries especially, as you and I have talked in the past briefly, India and Asia,
yeah,
are, you know,
yeah.
China, I should say, are going to be the future. And the fact of the matter is both of their populations are poised for middle-class expansion, which means whipping the credit card out of the wallet and saying,
right.
let's go consumerism. And our folks are going to benefit measurably from that. And all that Bush and the others are trying to do is make sure that the track that continues on remains as peaceful and as unimpeded as possible, and where possible, looks back to the United States to try and even out the balance issues. I know that Schwarzenegger and Gavin Newsom are trying desperately to make sure the Chinese look to us first when they want the infrastructure for biomedical
right.
services and
mm-hmm.
for chips and the rest of it. It's a two-way street.
Bill, and speaking of all what you were just saying, one of the most important things that I know Mr. Bush is going to talk to the Chinese about is intellectual property, protecting our intellectual property, not ripping off our stuff, because that's one of the biggest threats to our future, isn't it?
It is, and I think that again, it's not uncoincidental that all three are from, you know, the two politicians from California are also there. The movie and the publishing business are pushing relentlessly for this. This is where the Chinese have really gone to town. And I think
right.
I think those things are going to have to come in line, and they will.
Well, it's going to be a challenge, though, because right now, China, I don't know about India so much, but China is the wild, wild west in terms of managing intellectual property and that sort of thing. Bill, we've run out of time. We've always have too much to say and not enough time to do it, but thank you for being here. Give us your website one more time.
It's www.dsi.biz, and I encourage your listeners, to, as you say, to check the articles out. What you can learn can help you avoid problems in the future.
Thank you, Bill. Bill Brandt, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. I'll be back on the other side of the news. Don't go away.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.